We need women to be successful, yeah? There's no question that this world needs women breaking glass ceilings, sitting up at the top of the decision-making tree, helping to develop the world that we want to live in. So for me, it's about how do we make them successful in a way that still feels meaningful for them.
Welcome to Leading You. I'm your host, Julie Hyde, and in this space, we delve into the dynamic intersection of leadership and mindset. Join me as we uncover the essential tools and insights you need to sculpt your own success and lead a life you absolutely love. With me today is Jo Wagstaff, and Jo is an internationally renowned leadership coach and speaker. She has worked with many premier Australian and global firms to support thousands of professionals to embrace the power of conscious, authentic leadership, leading from within. She has recently written her book, Lead Like You, a roadmap for women to lead more authentic and fulfilling lives. And we're going to touch on that today. So welcome, Jo.
Thanks, Julie. It's really lovely to be here. I've been looking forward to this conversation.
Yeah, me too. I'm really keen to jump into your book, but I'd love to start with a little bit about your story because you have been on quite the journey to get where you are now. Can you share the pivotal moment when you decided to change your life?
If only that was a really clean and simple answer. When I reflect on that, I think there's both an unconscious moment and a conscious moment. And I think the unconscious moment, as I share in my book, was, you know, I was a senior executive in a leading listed financial services company. I was the only female sitting at the executive table, the youngest by some years. I was 32. I was married to a gorgeous investment banker. I had a 14-month-old son. I flew at the front end of the plane. You know, I just had this life that was arguably out of a magazine and I should have reached everything that I had hoped for my career ever and actually for my life. And I remember vividly being invited to James Packer. James was sat on the board of our business and going to his apartment for a welcome cocktail party for our executive team and him taking me around the apartment and walking past. I always talk about this. I can never forget this amazing fish tank, this huge fish tank he had, and showing me into the powder room because I wanted to, you know, touch my lipstick up as I did and make sure I looked okay. And this is kind of, I think, the unconscious moment of really seeing in my eyes at that moment that what was looking back at, who was looking back at me, was someone that was actually really very sad and very unfulfilled. And having achieved everything that I thought I needed to achieve to be happy, I actually wasn't. Now, I don't think that was the moment I changed my life. I think that was the moment I unconsciously maybe changed my life because my life started to spiral out of control after that. My marriage ended. My father died of cancer very suddenly. Very quickly, I should say. I chose to step away from a corporate career. I started to look to alcohol and I found a very dysfunctional relationship that I think was me kind of in a lot of pain and unworthiness and grief and not knowing how to hold all of that. And so my life got very messy for a few years. And then I think the pivotal change when I really decided I wanted to change my life from a conscious perspective was really my son and realizing that I was no longer being the mother that I wanted to be or the person that I wanted to be. And I asked for help and I started doing therapy and I got sober and I really started a deep inner journey to understand why I did what I did and who I was and what was important to me and kind of rebuild a whole new life in a nutshell.
Yeah, and that is very much the condensed version and in the nutshell. And thank you for sharing that because that's very deeply personal. I can imagine like those realizations, you know, when we look in the mirror and we're like, not quite happy with that. But then when you realize you're not being the mother that you want to be for your child, that would be very confronting and very hurtful for you to come to that realization. But of course, it's a catalyst for you to change, which is positive.
Totally, totally. And it was all of those things. Yeah, a very painful process. I often say to people, I'm not a big one for regrets, but if I have one regret in my whole life, it would be that I couldn't have been a better or a more present, conscious mother in those first few years of my son's life.
Yeah. Thank you for sharing that. It would have taken a lot of courage to go through what you did. But, of course, it's got you to where you are today. And, of course, you've written your book, Lead Like You, which does start with you sharing a lot about your personal story in detail. But what was the catalyst for you to write your book?
Again, I think there's probably two answers in that. There's, again, at a deeply personal level, I really believe, and I've reflected on, I've been asked this a few times now, and I've really been reflecting on this in the last couple of months since the book's been published. And I think part of it was really to understand myself. So I think writing is a really healing thing, confronting thing. So I think part of it was about me making meaning of my life, both what had happened to me in my childhood and what had created the kind of limiting beliefs that drove me and the overdrive that drove me in my drivenness in my career. And so there was a real unpacking for me on a deep soul level, actually, of who I was and making meaning of what had happened and who I'd become. And then within that, I think there was a desire for some self-acceptance and some self-forgiveness within that too. And I think that's been a big part of this journey for me. The second part of the catalyst is, and, you know, isn't the work we do such a gift? I have worked with thousands of executives, men and women, but I have a great passion for working with women. And I've watched very similar struggles to mine. You know, they may not have been as loud as mine or mine, although mine, no one knew about mine. Most of mine was going on behind the scenes anyway. And I have watched women struggle to make meaning of their lives. I've watched them to struggle to create sustainable success in their lives, to understand even what success is. Like, is it what we were brought up to believe it to be, or what the world tells us it should be, or is it something that is really meaningful for me that I'm doing what I'm doing? And so, yeah, I think that's why I finished the book, and it's definitely why I published the book, because at one point I was like, I don't know that I'll ever publish this book. Maybe it's just for me. But the more I worked with women, the more I saw the similarities in the struggles and the struggle, as I said, to make purpose and meaning, the more I saw the struggle in parenthood of how do we be the mother we want to be or the parent we want to be and be successful and fulfilled in our careers. And so that was definitely the catalyst to finish the book. And as you know, there's a lot of stories of the women that I've worked with within the book as well, which they kindly allowed me to share, because I think at the end we all want to understand ourselves but also feel understood by others. And my hope is that this book helps people to understand, oh, me too, I'm not alone in these struggles that we all have, and there is another way. There is another way.
Absolutely. And I'm very glad you finished the book. So thank you for that. But you're right. I think for people to hear your story and other stories, it sort of validates them, doesn't it? It's like, oh, I'm not crazy. I'm not someone who can't manage my life, or I haven't found that purpose that I'm looking for or the fulfillment that I'm looking for. But it is so common. And as you said, we're brought up to believe that we have to work in a particular way. And then COVID hit us a couple of years ago. I hate saying that word, the dreaded C word, but we that was the opportunity. That was a bit of a leveler for everyone to sit back and reprioritize what was important to us. And I think opened up a lot of people's eyes. And now I feel that there's that great misalignment between what the organization expects and then what people want in terms of their working life and how they work.
And, you know, Julie, it just reminds me, I remember working with a young man, actually, a father and husband in an organisation that I've done a lot of work with early in COVID. And because he was having to be at home all the time now, working from home, his seven-year-old son said to him, "Daddy," or maybe he was even younger, he said, "Daddy, I thought you lived in the computer," because he was away travelling for work all the time. And this child was all of a sudden loving the fact his father was around so much. And he was really confronted by that. He was like, "Oh my God, I'm not being the role model I want to be for my son. I'm not spending the time or the presence with him." And that's created a massive change in how he does work. Yeah. And so I really take your point. I think it was a big eye-opener for many of us.
What would you do if you were confronted with a diagnosis that threatened your life? Would you continue to live as you are, or would you make some big changes? That's what happened to me on the 6th of October in 2021. My life changed within a second, forever. This moment was a catalyst for me to look deep within and assess if I was living a life I loved. I wasn't. I was tolerating too much of it. And now I've made big changes, and I want to empower you with the choice to do the same. My second book, You Always Have a Choice, is now available, and I share 9 powerful strategies to let go of overwhelm and the relentless struggle and implement changes so you can lead a life you love. Head to youalwayshaveachoice.com.au to grab your copy. So what would you say is the absolute key message in your book? What's that guiding light for people?
Yeah, the subtitle is How Authenticity Transforms the Way We Live, Love and Succeed for Women. And, you know, I think the underlying message for me is success, in my opinion, is only worth it if we create success that is true to ourselves, that comes from a place of passion, purpose and meaning. And this book is about taking people on a journey to work that out for themselves and give them a pathway to create sustainable success, because I see so many people on the edge of burnout at the moment and in all areas of their life. So, you know, what is success at work and away from work? And how do we create that in a sustainable way? Because it's not, for me, we do add a lot of talk about the sea change where people kind of left your corporate jobs or, and some people do choose to do that. Some people I work with choose to leave their corporate careers. But I actually am finding more and more that it's about kind of reigniting the fulfillment in our career. And it's not always about leaving. It's just about learning how to do it differently.
Yes, absolutely. I'll touch on that in a moment, because you ask a great question in your book in terms of why do we work so hard? Like, just why do we do that? What is that driving force behind the work hard mentality rather than the work smart mentality, or work in alignment with our values, or whatever that looks like?
Yeah. Well, I suspect if you spoke to your clients and I speak to mine, the vast majority of us were told at some point by our parents, you work hard. You know, working hard is what gets you that success. And that's not to have a go at parents. I think societally, we're given a lot of strong messages. And, you know, there's some really pragmatic, realistic, obvious answers to that question, which I don't want to ignore. You know, we have mortgages to pay. We have food to put on our family's plates. We have school fees if we've got children. We have lifestyles that we want. We've got desires that we value. And we've got dreams and ambitions for our career. So it's, you know, I don't want to make this kind of all wrong. Again, for me, it's not about a right or wrong or a don't or do. It's about the how. But the more clients that I worked with, I realized that they, like me, were exhausted from working too hard and trying too hard. So trying to be liked, trying to be the best at everything that we do, trying to be the smartest person in the room, trying to feel in control of our lives. And ultimately, that is us looking for external validation. And again, we are brought up in that. You know, adult stages of development, theory tells us that 68% of adults will orientate everything from the outside in. So they look to the outside world to tell us that we are okay, that we are doing a good job, that we are good enough. But really, that at a deep level, there's an unworthiness in us that we are kind of trying to prove ourselves still. And, you know, for women, it can be even just fitting into a very male-dominated workplace. And, you know, you and I talked about that earlier around who do I need to be and how do I be to fit into this culture or this organization or this place? And yeah, that's an exhausting way for us to live our lives. But we often work harder and try harder. When we come from that place, that energy is an exhausting energy. And again, I talk about in the book that we've got these kind of unconscious needs that as children we learn to get met. And I love Karen Horney's work, and she breaks it down into these kind of reactive coping strategies that we create as children. One is to comply. So the way I get on in my family is to do what everybody says. And so I do a lot of pleasing, and I'm going to kind of unconsciously keep moving towards people and having people accept me. The second tendency is a controlling tendency. So if that first one doesn't work in terms of trying to comply and fit in, then I kind of move against and I'm looking to take control of my life. And underneath that is kind of a fear of failure, because success is very much about where our worth is coming from. And this third tendency, and all of these are about trying to get some needs met, by the way, is about protecting. So if neither of the first two work, then we kind of move away and we go up into our heads and we become, you know, we'd like to be known for being incredibly smart. And so again, all of this sort of over intellectualizing, but all of this is orientated from the outside, where we are still trying to get our worth or our value from the outside. And I think that drives a lot of the overwork, not the working hard. Sometimes we have to work hard. Sometimes there's a lot on, but that constant working hard, the nervous system that's never at rest. We're constantly in fight, flight or freeze. We can't rest, deeply rest, and kind of go, that's enough for today. I've done enough. I'm enough. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And just breathe. And even you just saying it like that, I was just like, oh, take a breath. Nice.
But we're not taught how to do that. We're rarely taught how to do that.
Yeah. Luckily, there's people like you who are teaching people to do that, Jo. So, and going back to this burnout conversation that is very prevalent at the moment, because the rates of burnout are increasing. And you share that in a 2023 survey of Australian working women found that 54% reported an increased level in stress, 30% ongoing burnout, and 16% left their jobs in 2022, citing lack of flexibility. And I think in the State of the Workplace burnout report in 2024, there's an increased level of women experiencing burnout. So it's not improving, even though we're continually having these conversations and people are sharing how to avoid burnout, but we're still not. So going back to your point, like, women want to be successful. They deserve to be successful. So they're striving in their careers to achieve that. But how do women work in a way that is sustainable for their energy and to avoid burnout, but still be successful at the same time?
Yeah, beautiful question. And we need women to be successful. Yeah, there's no question that this world needs women breaking glass ceilings, sitting up at the top of the decision-making tree, helping to develop the world that we want to live in. So I'm a big opponent of that. For me, it's about how do we make them successful in a way that still feels meaningful for them. And as you say, without kind of burning themselves out. And without sounding a little facetious, my book is broken into three parts: know yourself, care for yourself, and be yourself. And that's, for me, is the solution. And the know yourself part is about really understanding what it is that is driving you, especially your overdrive. Because there is, you know, our greatest strengths when overplayed become our greatest weaknesses. And there's some research in the book that talks about of a research base of 85,000 leaders, female leaders showed up as the most highly effective leaders. Well, of the highly effective leaders, they had the innate relationship skills that was creating this very strong. Now, they were still very achievement orientated, but they put the two together. But what was sort of hard to read, even though I know it innately in myself and in the women I work with, is these women had an increased level of doubt versus the male leaders. They had a propensity to go into overdrive and perfectionism. So they needed to be the best at the best. Now, I get where that comes from. And I think at times we do need to be the best of the best. But there is a point where, again, that for me, that clicks into overdrive and it exhausts us. So we never give ourselves that deep breath that you and I just had earlier. So firstly, knowing ourselves, understanding what drains our energy, understanding those reactive tendencies when they're at play for us. The second part, caring for ourselves. So what are the boundaries we need to put in place? You know, I work with this amazing CFO at a large global organization, and she was certain that the only way it was going to work for her was for her to leave her corporate career and go and do something else, because she was dead certain that they were never going to accept if she started to put some serious boundaries around what time, what calls she didn't get on, what she didn't attend. She had a young son. And yet when I said to her, well, why don't we just try? And if it doesn't work, you can leave the organization. You can change careers. But when she tried, the opposite happened. She actually got more respect. People that were coming to her all the time found someone else to go to for all the issues. And so I've seen this work over and over again, where our story is, they'll never accept that. I can't hold boundaries. I can't prioritize my executive well-being. I'm juggling children as well. And I get that. I'm not saying it's easy. But if we don't take care of ourselves first, nobody else will. And we can't show up and be our best. But oh my goodness, as women, and I see plenty of men like this too, we are not good at taking care of ourselves or prioritizing that. And then the third part is the being ourselves, which is being very clear on our vision for success, on our values, our purpose, and living in alignment. And you said this earlier about COVID. Am I actually living in alignment with what is important to me? And unless I stop and ask that question first, like what is important to me, how do I even begin to come back into alignment with that?
Yeah. Beautifully answered. And going back to your point about, you know, your CFO who eventually used her voice and stated what she wanted to do and how she wanted to work, and that work for her, that is such an important message for women in particular, because they feel very resistant to doing that, but men as well, to actually dig deep and find that courage and establish, okay, so how is it that you do want to work? And then, okay, so how can I align my working life to that? It's all about clarity, isn't it?
Yeah, it is about clarity, and it's about slowing down, because contrary to what we think it is, which is we need to speed up, we need to do more, we've got to find a way, actually it is about slowing down and get clearer on our priorities, both in the workforce, you know, in our roles as well as in our lives. You know, I use that CFO as one example. I have worked with hundreds that have done the same, and it has completely changed their way of living and leading. But it feels uncomfortable.
Exactly. And, you know, as we're talking about it, like it all sounds very simple and we'll just do this, but there's a lot of work that goes into that, and it's great to be working with someone who can actually help you do that, to offer you perspective from the outside and to sort of help you move through that, be your cheerleader, be your support person.
I almost believe it's impossible to do it without that. Well, it's not impossible, but boy, it's hard. Yeah, I think often we think we're meant to do all of this stuff alone, and it is so much easier when we're doing it with support around us.
Yeah, 100%. Jo, I could speak to you all day. It's been an absolute pleasure to have you part of Leading You. And I think we're in total alignment with our messages. And I'll be sharing the links in terms of how to get in contact with you and where to buy your book in the show notes. Is there a final, you know, brief message that you'd like to leave with our listeners today?
I think my final comment is just around authenticity. Yeah. Living out of alignment with ourselves, living in cognitive dissonance, is kind of soul destroying. And we don't want to wake up 20 years down the track and think, oh God, why did I do that? Like, that's not how I pictured it. And so my encouragement is to create some space to stop, reflect, and answer the questions that are really important for you and get the support to do that.
Beautiful. Jo, thank you so much for being part of Leading You.
Thank you for having me. It's been lovely.